Hellman on CliffCentral.com.
It's a Take Charge Tuesday.
On a Tuesday.
On a Tuesday. There you go. So this is that part of the week where like you take, you know, like you have an iTunes library and you switch through all the different album covers.
Yeah.
So with this, like you take, your life and all the different aspects of album covers. So, you know, there's, love, relationships, finance, all of that. And now we're swiping through these and trying to take charge of different things, right?
Yeah, definitely. You're just trying to gain control of certain things because, I mean, if you're not planning where you're going, if you don't know where you're going to go, then you're just going to end up anywhere.
That's it. You've got to try and plot it out a little bit.
That's true.
Still be open to changes, but that's plot it out a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. As long as at least you have some sort of direction, you know. Normally, once you form a direction as, okay, that's more or less where I want to go. Things and the right opportunities come your way.
Yeah.
And you see them for what they are because you know what you're trying to do in life. You know?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay. So I got a little emotional when I saw the first thing on the agenda here. Because, you know, like we discussed yesterday, I'm 26.
Ish.
I was 25 like a year ago. I'm 26 now.
Ish, man.
25, obviously, if the average person lives 100 years, that would mean 25 is a quarter. It's a quarter.
Yeah.
It's a quarter life crisis.
Ish, man. Ish.
I can't even bring myself to really say quarter.
Quarter life crisis.
Oh, bro. You see, you're 24, so you can, because it doesn't affect you yet. But the second you turn 25 next year, Wezzer, it's all downhill, bro.
Tragic.
Okay, so the 24-year-old Wezzer wants to tell you people that are 25 plus about a quarter life crisis situation.
Oh, goodness.
First of all, it is a real thing, right?
Yeah, no, it is a real thing. And you know what? It's not a bad thing. It's better to have a quarter life crisis than to have a midlife crisis. You see, because most people go through life, you know, in the beginning when they're still toddlers, we have all these dreams, things that we want to do, and we know what we like, but then we get channeled as we grow older. You know, your dad says, well, I was an engineer, I want you to be an engineer, or so actuaries make a lot of money, you should go into actuary, or maybe your school teacher is trying to channel you into a certain field. And what happens is you can sometimes succumb to the pressures from the outside world to get channeled into a certain career. And now when you're in your 20s, man, now you've studied into this and now you're working there, but you realize, man, I don't know, this might not be it. I don't think this is what I want to do. This is what they want me to do. Yes, I'm making them happy, but I'm not happy. What happens is most people are too scared to make that shift when they're in their 20s. So what they do is they just ride along. They say, nah, I'll wait for you know, when things are a little bit better, when I have a little bit more money. And what normally happens is, well, you get married. After marriage, you get kids. And now, you know, things get tighter and tighter and you can't really get out. And once a person is around 50, 55, only now do you say, whew, well, the kids are gone. I can now do my dreams. But now you 55, man. Why are you watching in a club for at 55? It's because only now you want to do what you wanted to do. And this whole time you've been living their dream, but not yours. And you've been trying to make your mom happy and your dad happy and all these other people. You see, so when you have a quarter life crisis, when you have this feeling in your 20s, it's better to satisfy it now and start living a purposeful life that is, you know, passion, full of passion, full of enjoyment now. Because what if you die when you're 27? Or what if you die when you're 28 and you're like, eish, shucks, I didn't realize that I'm only going to get one chance to live this life. I thought I was going to get a second chance where I can do what I want to do and not what my mom wanted me to do. You see, so it's not a bad thing that you are feeling the way you're feeling right now, Ari.
Tell me about, you know, balancing out, making other people happy and making yourself happy. I mean, do you feel like it should always just be a case of if you are happy, inadvertently, it'll be positive? Or is there an aspect of a person that should really value and consider making other people happy in addition to making yourself happy? And how do you figure out that scale?
I think it is definitely important to make sure that other people are happy in a way. But you need to figure out what is happiness really. Like when you have a chat with your mother, let's say your mother is the one. For instance, in my case, my mother has been the one that wanted to channel me into this engineering thing because I said I wanted to be an engineer at some point in my life. And then I was the one who convinced her that this thing has a lot of money and that this thing is solid and whatever. So eventually she was then the one to say, okay, cool, I'm canvassing for that, then you're not going to leave it. Please stay in it. Don't do anything now. You don't want to jeopardize your chances. And what I asked her was, tell me, I know you want something good for my life. What do you want for my life? Okay, no, I want you to be happy. I want my kids to do what they wanted to do in life, and I want them to, you know, not struggle and stress. Okay, cool. So what if I can not struggle and stress and be happy the way you want me to be happy, doing what I really would love to do? And normally what is also needed is that you can prove that, okay, this is also, you know, paying the bills. This is also satisfying in that other area. Because, you know, no parent wants to see their child struggle. And normally the opposition, when you're having a quarter life crisis, the other people think you're going to struggle if you don't do what they think is right for you, you know. And what you need to be able to do is prove that you won't struggle. So what I did in my life, for instance, I started the voiceover artistry and acting stuff and emceeing and so on. I started that on the side while I was still studying, and it grew slowly but surely, gradually. And by the time I was, you know, of, you know, thereby final year and so on, in industry, I was already like 3, 4, 5 years old in industry. So even there, you know, I'd already grown my pubic hair. What I mean is I'd already, you know, established myself in the corporate space, when it comes to entertainment or whatever I wanted to do, the passion side. So by the time now I had to say, listen, mom, I want to make the shift. And then now people are panicking. And then you say, well, let's look at the figures.
Yeah, you can back it up.
I can back it up. And that's what we need to be able to do in our 20s. Just as long as you can back it up, you should be fine going after your passion.
How do you know that you're going through a quarter life crisis? I mean, when do you really know that it's real and you need to sit and take stock? Because, I mean, naturally, we're very dramatic as people.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I might say, oh, I'm going through a quarter life crisis or whatever. Like, and I might be doing a disservice to people that are really going through a quarter life crisis.
I think sometimes there are, you know, deep inside what you've always wanted to do, and it almost eats at you every single time. You as you're sitting doing work for, let's say you're sitting at a bank or something, and as you're doing the work, you're thinking, this can't be life, man. This can't be it. And you ask yourself, if I was to die, you know, pretty soon, how would I feel? Would I feel like, man, shucks. Oh no, that is such a waste of a life. Or would I feel like, okay, that wasn't too bad? And normally you'd feel that if you were living your passion, going after what you want, even if you died a bit early, you'd feel like, that wasn't too bad. That was good. But when you feel like, no, please give me a few more years. Normally that feeling comes when you think, shucks, I they are still so, these things that I really wanted to do, this was not it yet. I was, my real story hadn't started yet. You know, imagine that it was your life was a movie, but the whole Titanic part hadn't started yet. It was, you were still right there where you were still playing dice with the other guys trying to get a ticket to get onto the Titanic, and it cut right there. You'd feel like, no, listen, that's not enough to judge the story, please. And normally when you feel like that and it starts to eat at you and you really, you know what you want to do, like you know it, but you stuck here. And when I ask you, why aren't you living your dream? And you say, I would, but, and then those buts normally are about other people that you're trying to keep happy, and people that you don't want them to stress about you. You don't want them to think that you've lost the track or whatever. You know, it happens quite a lot, especially with families where, you know, the father is an academic and the mother's an academic, and they expected you to be a doctor or a lawyer. And that's not what you wanted to do. You wanted to be as cool as Ari on radio.
And even he's like, man, I'm going through a quarter life crisis. I want to take a word and sort of inject it into this conversation and see how it fits in. Because it seems like if you've got this word on lock, a quarter life crisis won't affect you, a midlife crisis won't affect you. I think that it seems like a very difficult word for a lot of people to figure out. And that word is purpose.
Yeah.
And if you've got that in check, you know, a quarter life crisis may not affect you as heavily as it would somebody else.
Yeah.
So maybe do you think that the bigger issue is figuring out purpose and actually just an effect of not knowing what your purpose is or taking time to figure out that journey or discover it could be something like a quarter life crisis.
Yeah, I mean, it's always such a, you know, it's something that eats away at you inside when you think, hey, but what is my purpose? I don't know. What am I really here for? Well, which gap am I filling? Because everyone wants to be counted. I mean, I think the worst thing is to be insignificant. If you were to die today and then we don't even remember that you were here, there's no gap that you left to say, I was here, you know. And I read a book once, and this book actually was pretty challenging. Somewhere in the middle of the book, it said you should write your own. Is it called an obituary?
Yeah.
It said write your own and pretty much write what is going to be written on the tombstone and what the pastor is going to read out that day. And if you think about that and you say, okay, what would they say about me? That right there, that's your purpose. Hmm. What gap are you going to fill? When they say, here lies Ari Kelman. We known him for his this, his that. He will always be remembered for this and that. The gap that he left in the community because of this will always be missed. Those are the things that can make your life have purpose in life. And you're saying, yeah, yeah.
But now it's so interesting. And I mean, I think about this in my context. I don't know when it comes to yours. Like, I guess the things that perhaps I would want in an obituary, if I look at, like, you know, my average day or whatever.
Yeah.
I don't know if that stuff all necessarily contributes to what that obituary, well, what I would want it to be, I don't know.
What would you want?
I don't know. Yeah, was this oak and he was just dope. or maybe what I am doing does tie into that. I don't know. It's difficult to be that honest, sort of with yourself.
Yeah.
It seems to me like you'd be better at this than I would.
So I mean, I was challenged in the thing to write it down, and at first I was stunned, just like yourself, because you never thought like that.
Yeah.
You never thought of thinking about that. And well, it brings me to something I think someone else said, which was if you aim at nothing, you'll hit it every single time. So if your purpose is not aimed at something, you're gonna hit that nothing every single time, and you won't have a purpose because you've not been aiming.
So how do you aim better, bro?
I think if you try and imagine what that guy is going to say about you, and you can now pretty much wake up from the dead and say, wait, my story has not been written yet. Say this, please. And then you realize that, well, for him to say that, you have to live that. So then at least now you have something to live for, because you know that if you live this way, that's what they'll say about you. And that's what you want to be remembered for.
By the way, this isn't Take Charge Tuesday. This is me in therapy with Weza.
Yeah. I'll send my invoice.
Yeah,
to you.
I should actually be lying on the couch in the studio on this.
I think we should do that next time.
Yeah,
right?
This black leather couch of ours. I should be lying on that while Weza sits in the chair with his notepad and takes notes. But it is an interesting one when you start to decode it. And that's a great exercise, actually, in order to help you get better at figuring out how to take charge.
Yeah.
Is to think, what is it that you would want to be remembered for?
Yeah.
And if you're honest about that, it might dictate a couple of changes in your life, which might be difficult, but it's important to align to maybe what you want your legacy to be.
Yeah, I mean, this hit me hard when we lost Simba a couple of years ago, you know, and I'm standing here and Gareth is saying a couple of things about Simba, and you see things written about him, and I'm thinking, how old was he? Man, he was still in his 20s. Mm. And people have these great things to say about him. Wow, what will they say about me if I die in my 20s? Hmm. Will I be as significant as he was? Or maybe will I just, you know, kind of be as a shadow when the light appears and no one will even notice?
Simba Mira was, just in his own lane. It's a heavy one.
Yeah.
But it's a crazy exercise.
So I had a chat with someone and he said to me last weekend, in life, it's almost like we all in different leagues, right? You might not necessarily be in Kevin Hart's league, and you might not be in Trevor Noah's league, but you're in Aria's league. But then there may be someone in a smaller league. There's, you know, Champions League and Mvela and the PSL. Everyone has the little league, but in life, you normally get a lot of spectators. People who say, wow, did you see that new car? Did you see that Bentley that Gareth was driving with? Did you see this? People, you know, they get a lot of spectators. Then you get a couple of people who are actively participating. They're actually players within their leagues, right? Mm. And what he was saying is, no matter how big your league is, even if it's small, just strive to be an active player in your league. Even if you're that dude from the, you know, from the township with that, with the golf, with the city golf, and people say, yeah, the one with the city golf. Be that dude with the city golf. Just be a, you know, be a somebody in your little league. I think if you do that, it'll also, you know, it'll also contribute to just that good feeling about, okay, cool. I think we're on the right track.
Definitely some food for thought, and some serious homework taking out of this week's Take Charge Tuesday. In order to play in any league, though, obviously you need to be a little bit skilled up in whatever that league is.
Yeah.
And I know that one thing that you really wanted to speak about was these new stats according to Stats SA, talking about the fact that young black kids are less skilled than what their parents are. Which I had to kind of double read that, because it doesn't seem to me that that would be the case, you know, in the context of where we are as a country.
Yeah, it is pretty shocking. I think if you think about how the education system is currently and how it used to be back in the day, sometimes when you leave high school, you'd leave with a certain skill. They are still in the country, a couple of technical high schools. These are high schools that will either teach you a bit of welding. I know a couple of them in the Val. You know, you either do welding or you're doing hospitality or you're doing technical drawing. But you would pretty much in a way already be employable, even if it's just on a small scale. And it you're not just an academic, but you know, you have some know-how as well. Technical schools do this quite well. But now the thing is, there's a lack of infrastructure. Not every school can become a technical school because, I mean, you need more money to make sure that the labs are there, to make sure that, you know, even all the tools that are necessary are there and they're not getting stolen as well. So because of this, I think the government had moved to a situation where they had more schools that were just teaching the theory and less schools that were teaching applying the theory into practice. And I think you are getting now this imbalance where a lot of the people who were in the previous systems, and I know they call this new one, it's changed so many times, I don't even know what's called anymore. You remember it was called OBE at some stage and so on. But the old one before this had all this technical stuff, and people from that generation have certain skills, you know, and people from this younger generation, they still need to maybe go to a technicon or a college to acquire certain skills, because they just have the, you know, the reading part, but not the hands-on stuff. So they're not skilled, especially now. I mean, in the skilled laborer section, that's more or less where we're talking to right now.
Yeah, it's an ironic one that it's crazy that that is the situation.
Yeah.
Do you think that young South Africans are motivated enough though, and are willing to put in the effort that is required in order to upskill themselves? Or do you think that it is a generation of instant gratification and we don't have the same work ethic that, you know, perhaps previous generations may have had? I don't know.
Well,
my parents think I'm the laziest little shit that they have ever come across.
Yeah.
They think I have zero commitment to anything.
Yeah.
Which is why I ask. And it would be difficult for us to even answer because our context
instant.
Is ours.
Everything is instant these days. Instant noodles, even instant pop, bruh.
Well, Google. Like, Google, you know, it's instant. Mean? You want to know something, you type it into Google.
Yeah.
And I wonder what that's doing to us in terms of, you know, the skill in the first place of wanting to upskill and putting in the effort of upskilling.
And sometimes it, I mean, a lot of things come into play here. More kids want to be famous than the kids who want to be doctors. And so they're all sitting in class saying, I'm not going to use this anyway. I'm going to be a rapper. And so back in the day, You
that wasn't an option.
You know, you're not out here saying you're going to be a millionaire rapper. You know, it was just out of the question.
Yeah.
And now, because it looks so easy, I mean, look at idols, look at, you know, any talent type of competition. People want to just flock to that because it seems so easy and instant, and everyone thinks they're famous or they want to be famous, you know. And so you get that type of attitude even now with high school kids, where they're thinking, I don't think I need this that much. I mean, after the test, I'm going to forget it anyway. There's even this thing called study, what, cram past and forget it. Yeah, it's CPF. Yeah, CPF. I know, just CPF.
Cram it, pass it, and then forget it.
Yeah.
I don't know. So, I mean, in terms of taking charge when it comes to upskilling yourself, what kind of conversation do you think we need to be having when it comes to finding out how to do things and putting in the effort in terms of learning how to do stuff?
I think what we first need to notice is what's important is this. I heard from Les Brown this morning when I was watching a video. He said, the problem is that people don't know that they don't know, and they think they know. Yeah.
Well, we got to do that one more time.
People don't know that they don't know, and yeah, they think they know.
Yeah. It's ego.
Yeah. So, I mean, and that's the main problem. And people think that they...
Above things. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's the main problem. But, I mean, if you just take on that humble approach, you say, hey, man, I might just be in trouble if I don't know enough. The good news is, now, unlike back then, I didn't have to walk to the nearest library and try to, you know, talk very silently while I search for a book. Internet is there. Because this is an instant
process. Yeah.
Let's use it to our advantage to say, well, that means I can learn a skill quick. I can just YouTube everything that I want to do. Like me and my friend right now have decided, how about let's start making whiskey? And we thought, why not? I mean, we got taught some stuff at varsity, how to do it. And we just decided to start. We bought some stuff. We out here experimenting. And why not? Google the stuff, YouTube it. You'll get ahead.
Actually, what you're touching on now is something really amazing, and that is that if you are willing to upskill yourself, it's now easier than it ever was before.
Easier than ever
because
before.
Because of the access to information.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we should see it as an exciting time, actually, to say, man, I can go and be a genius in everything.
Well, listen, it's been a very powerful Take Charge Tuesday. What are the final words to encapsulate a lot of the themes and the pieces that we've been speaking about?
Yeah, well, I devised this quote for myself. It's one of my own. I said it about yesterday in one of the podcasts, but in case you missed it, it is, live your dream while time is still on your side. You have nothing to lose except the fear of the unknown.
Power. And of course, we know from yesterday how to keep up with you, but just tell us one more time, Wizza.
So on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, everywhere, it's just at Wizza That Guy. No down dash, no underscore, no nothing.
And Wizza's going to be back with you on Thursday along with the rest of the Unplugged and In Charge crew.
Yeah.
Of course, this is a Take Charge Tuesday, but then there's an Unplugged and In Charge Thursday where you get like the full edition.
The full edition.
So this is like the opening act for the full edition.
Yeah.
But it's a good opening act, so you better deliver in the full edition on Thursday.
Don't worry.
And that's at 12, huh?
Yeah, it's at 12 o'clock, so we'll see you around like a donut.
Power, dude. Thanks so much. Hellman on CliffCentral.com.